This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Welcome back, folks. Hope you're having a great Wednesday so far. And just remember that tonight, the Young Leadership Council's Wednesday at the Square, and they've teamed up with WWL and Odyssey New Orleans. This concert series at Lafayette Square in the CBD showcases all of your favorite local music and emerging artists, food, art, crafts, and it's free and open to the public. It is festival time. That's right. French Quarter Fest as well. Time to unwind. Come hang out after work at Wednesday at the Square. The weather's going to be absolutely gorgeous. Lafayette Square starting at 5 p.m. every Wednesday. Our own Annette Wade from our sister station, Magic 101.9, will be out there this Wednesday. She'll introduce this week's band, the Deslons with Dusky, presented by Abita Brewing Company, the YLC, and WWL. Don't miss it. It will be a blast. The weather's just been stunning the last couple of days, which is awesome. Great show today. Tricia Wallace, president of the Lincoln Beach Community Advisory Committee and co-founder of New Orleans for Lincoln Beach. There's been some discussion about whether or not Lincoln Beach will reopen by the summer of 2025. So we'll talk about that. There's a meeting tonight. We'll see whether or not this project is on track. We'll get an update from Tricia. Rob Fry, lead forecaster, National Weather Service. The first hurricane forecast was released this past Thursday by the Colorado State University, and predicts an above normal hurricane season. We'll talk about what that means. Michael Heck, G&O Inc. Hour at 11. And we'll be talking about their market mission to Australia and whether or not that has yielded in what happened there. Dale Chu, who we were supposed to have yesterday, posted an article. He's with the Fordham Institute about, is education at an inflection point? And the pandemic, he says, accelerated two key trends, a broad societal shift in literacy habits and a structural transformation in K-12 education through the rise of private school choice. We'll talk about what those implications are to education. I wanted to provide some information this morning. We meant to do it with Guy Williams the other day on Monday. We weren't got pressed for time talking about tariffs and tariffs and more tariffs and more tariffs and then even tariffs on top of tariffs. So we didn't get to it, but it's really important because we're less than a month away. Today's April the 9th. On May the 7th, the Transportation Security Administration will begin enforcing the Real ID rule. Write that down. May the 7th. If you intend to travel, their approach to this is going to be as follows. No tiki, no laundry. If you don't have a real ID or another acceptable alternative, and we'll talk about that in a minute, they will not allow you through the TSA checkpoints. Some airlines have said that they will accommodate folks in rebooking flights in order to accommodate them until they get their real ID. Others have been silent. Some will have financial penalties. Maybe some won't. That has still not totally revealed itself. So be aware of this. According to federal documents, about 56% of identification credentials in circulation right now comply with the standards. And that was as of last year. TSA spokespersons are saying that about 80% of travelers that have been going through security checkpoints with real IDs or approved alternatives. And that they process about 2 to 3 million people a day go through a TSA checkpoint. So what is this real ID? The real ID is a credential that's issued by the state. And it's a driver's license or identification cards that meet security standards set by the federal government. They put these in place after 9/11. They have had a delay in the implementation for a number of years. They have suspended this, but now May 7th, 2025 is the drop dead date. So states set their own rules. But to get a real ID, people need to provide documentation that shows at least their full legal name, birth date, social security number, lawful resident status, and two ways to prove their address. The easiest way to do that is with bills, right? Or if there's some other kind of ID that you have that that puts you at an address. People who don't have a real ID will need to provide other approved credentials. A passport is a good example of that. And we'll talk about other approved substitutes in a second. So the way you check as to whether or not you have a real ID or not is if you look at the top right-hand corner, you will see a yellow or black star, a white star set inside of a yellow or black circle, or star within the figure of a bear or something like that. There's going to be a star in the right corner. Why they couldn't just do it one way, I have no idea, but here we go again. So what else can you use to for proof of ID? U.S. passport, we said that earlier, is a one way of doing it. A DHS, Department of Homeland Security, trusted traveler card for programs such as Global Entry, Nexus, U.S. Department of Defense identification, Veteran Health identification card, U.S. Merchant Mariner credential, or identification issued by a federally recognized tribal nation. Foreign government issued passports, permanent resident cards, border crossing cards, and Canadian provincial driver's licenses are also accepted, right? Now, the reason that this is important, that there, you know, a lot of states are having difficulties in processing this all at one time. There have been reports in the media of long lines, appointments not really available for you. As we get closer and closer to May 7th, a lot of people never do today what you can put off till tomorrow. You're going to be hit with long lines. In Louisiana, there are a number of alternatives. There are a number of auto title places and things like that that the state has approved that are authorized to issue real IDs. So if you get on the internet, you might be able to find one of those places that are able to accommodate you. So Homeland Security, and I said this at the opening, this is do or die, so to speak. If you don't have it, and if you don't have a an acceptable alternative, you are not going to be permitted through the security checkpoint. Plain and simple. So if you have a passport, make sure it's still valid. Getting those done, the delays are not as bad as they once were during the pandemic. They have improved. You could probably get one by May 7th right now if you did it today. Global Entry, they're kind of backed up with appointments. And, you know, I've heard of folks getting appointments a month out and greater. So if that's the case, probably not going to get it done by May 7th on a Global Entry card. And as more and more people are getting these alternative IDs, the lines are getting much, much longer. So I wanted to make...
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can choose the TV you want with DirecTV.
So now they can pick out their favorite entertainment when they sign up and save money?
You mean if you like sports?
You can get a sports pack.
What about entertainment?
Entertainment pack.
It's like finding an old pizza with your favorite toppings.
Which for me would be pineapple and toenails.
Pineapple?
Pay for the TV you want, not the TV you don't. Genre pack starting at $34.99 a month. Visit DirecTV.com for more information. New residential customers only. Local channels vary by market. Services renew monthly unless you cancel online. Credit card required. Restrictions apply.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
Sure that we cover that and make sure that you are aware of it. There hasn't been a whole lot of reporting on this issue. It is important. You do not want to get to that checkpoint and start feeling around because you're ID is not a real ID. So check it, make sure that you have it, and start figuring out how you're going to get it, right? Even if you're traveling in July or August, get it now. Get it over with. Once it becomes top of mind, resolve it. All right, we're going to pivot to something else real quick. There has been a lot of discussion about higher ed, the Trump administration, what they're doing relative to DOGE. We've had educators in higher ed say that this, what they're doing now, is the greatest threat to American universities since the Red Scare. Some have said that this is the end of college life, warning that the damage to our educational system could be worse than the public comprehends, and that calamity could arrive sooner than people expect. And the list goes on and on and on and on. And the truth be told, what has happened here is higher ed has been caught with their hand in the cookie jar. Plain and simple. So last year, let's just look at Ivy League schools. Last year, 2024, the federal government gave Ivy League schools, there's eight of them, $6.4 billion in grant funding. Columbia got $1.3 billion. Penn, $1.8 billion. Yale, $898 million. Cornell, $825 million. Harvard, $686 million. Princeton, $455 million. Brown, $254 million. And Dartmouth, $141 million. Now, this is over and above the $100 billion in student loans and $30 billion in Pell grants for education across the country, not just Ivy Leagues. These are all dollars that ultimately end up being federally financed that are going to higher ed universities. And they're not polling very well right now. In fact, I was reading an article that compared higher ed to the new big oil by Frederick Hess. A very interesting article, the similarities and the difficulties that they're having defending themselves. So the Trump administration has paused some of these grants. In the case of Columbia, at $1.3 billion, they paused $400 million. In the case of Penn, at $1.8 billion, they paused $175 million. In the case of Cornell, who received $825 million last year, they've paused $1 billion. And it's all, and the list goes on and on. It all has to do with violations of Title VI and Title IX. Race-based programs that should not exist. They have been slow in bringing those to an end, as well as the issues in Title IX in the protection of women and women's sports. But what's interesting is you're reading a number of stories that are saying that they are actually having hiring freeze, and they're engaged in cuts. But what's interesting about that as well is that these are cuts across the board. These are hiring freezes across the board. If these are directed dollars to research programs, is what these grants are for? These are not general grants that cover everything for a university. Then what's going on? Well, a number of folks have said that these dollars have supplanted the general overhead cost of the entire university as opposed to the actual overhead cost of the program being funded. And you can't help but think otherwise. Harvard is trying to procure a $750 million loan. So if these are directed dollars to specific research programs, why would this impact the entire university? Well, it's simple. They use these dollars to supplant. For example, in many cases, these universities, if you give them $100,000, they are putting $60,000 of the $100,000 to overhead. And only $40,000 of that $100,000 goes to the actual research. So the overhead calculation that they're placing here is they're basically supplanting and financing what would otherwise be the working cap, come from the working capital to cover these overhead costs, maintenance of these buildings, upkeep of the buildings, payment of utilities, things of that nature. And a lot of these research programs are very small. They take up just a couple of rooms, but yet they're paying 60% of the grant to overhead. It's a scam. It's a shell game. They know it. Now the world knows it, and they can't figure out how to explain it away. And it needs to come to an end. And we wonder why we're paying what we're paying in pharmaceuticals and everything else. Because what is happening is that there are all kinds of inurements that the researchers are able to receive in the aftermath of their research that was completely and totally financed by the taxpayers, and there's no payment back to us. The university and the individual researcher walks away with all of these dollars. And yet we finance it. What kind of an investment is that? Their hand is in the cookie jar in more ways than one. That doesn't make any sense for us to be financing this and to continue on. I hope they continue. I don't hope that they stop the funding. I hope that they change the rules. I hope that they make these universities more accountable to where these dollars are actually being spent, so that we're not funding these universities that have all kinds of money in the bank, tens of billions of dollars available to them. And where is the skin that they have in this game? That is yet to be pointed out. Very interesting. And when you think about this in the context of other things that are being uncovered, the most recent release by DOGE of the U.S. African Development Foundation, it's not a lot of money, but this is illustrative of what our government, this government, has decided that it's good to spend money in these categories. So there's a list of about maybe 6 or 7 or 8 programs under the U.S. African Development Foundation that has been terminated. And I'm sure there's more to come. $51 million in grants. $229,000 for marketing 100% organic shea butter in Burkina Faso. $84,000 for a business incubator for spa and wellness entrepreneurs in Nigeria. $239,000 for marketing pineapple juice in Benin. $246,000 and some change for mango drying facilities in the Ivory Coast. $99,500 to increase yogurt production in Uganda. $48,000 for a WhatsApp marketing chatbot in Kenya. $50,000 to train farmers to grow dragon fruit in Senegal. I know that we all are very creative and productive, and I don't know about you, but what line do they have for you for grants for anything like this? Like maybe urban gardens or urban farming or whatever it may be. And yet we're providing these dollars and this sustenance across the world, and no one can connect the dot as to why. We cannot be all things to all people. That's why we have a $36 trillion debt. But no one wants to come to this realization. We're fascist if we decide. I don't know that we should be marketing organic shea butter in Africa. I have a difficult time wrapping my head around that as to why that's a good thing. Or marketing pineapple juice. Or setting up a business incubator for spa and wellness entrepreneurs. What? Really? We'll be right back. Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Dale Chu, Senior Visiting Fellow of the Fordham Institute. He's also an independent consultant on education programs and policy. He starts out an article that he authored. For generations, a traditional public school has been a bedrock institution in American life. But recent developments suggest that this model is undergoing a stress test like never before, exacerbated by the recent cratering of student achievement. The pandemic accelerated two key trends: a broad societal shift in literacy habits and a structural transformation in K-12 education through the rise of private school choice. The title of the piece is Education at an Inflection Point, and Dale Chu joins us. Dale, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Neil. Always a pleasure.
Dale, you and I have talked several times about how the pandemic has influenced education, impacted it, and where we're going in the future. I actually love this piece that you authored because I think you point out some of the obvious that we just walk right around. Tell us more about how about this societal shift in literacy habits and this shift to school choice.
Yeah, no, thanks for the kind words, Noel. Yeah, so these are two big things in my mind that, just like you pointed out, we don't talk about enough. The first is this shift in literacy. And, you know, I'm a big proponent of making sure our kids are reading proficiently on grade level. But at the same time, we don't talk enough about the fact that maybe we're headed to what some folks have described as a post-literate society. And when I say that, folks often think about, you know, how the printing press fundamentally changed civilization. Are we in a world now where you have, you know, social media platforms like TikTok, which is arguably the stickiest, most addictive instrument in human history, right? And then we're moving in a direction where we're getting a lot of our information, most of our information, from short-form video versus reading articles or textbooks or what have you. And I think there's a lot of implications for what that could mean for schools if that is what the future has in store. The second thing around private school choice, if you look back just 15 years ago, I mean, I don't have a radio show, so I can't show images, but if you had if you could look at the U.S. map 15 years ago and look at the states that had private school choice or some form of choice, versus now, you know, the best way I can describe it, Noel, is it's two completely different worlds. And the big thing, the latest front is what's actually happened next door in Louisiana, in Texas. Texas is, just for the first time in the state's history, has passed a education savings account type of private school choice bill into the full House, which has never happened in Texas. And all signs are pointing towards a direction where Texas will very soon have a very wide-ranging private school choice program. And the long and short of that, Noel, is that if that does happen, you're going to have, when you look at our country, you're going to have close to 60% of kids have access to something beyond the traditional public school. And that's not something we've ever had before as a country.
That's a huge and major transformation. We went through something, I guess, a little bit similar, but obviously not as broad, with charter schools, right? And there have been really mixed outcomes with charter schools.
Yes and no. I think what we're referring to is there are some studies that show, on balance, charter schools, their academic results are on par with traditional public schools. However, if you look at some of the high-performing charter schools targeted towards urban areas, in most cases, those schools actually do outperform the traditional public school system. But I do think another element of this, which you're pointing to, Newell, is that with a lot of these private school choice programs, there isn't an accountability measure. So what that means is that it'll be very hard for states to really understand whether kids are doing better or worse if they go to something besides their traditional neighborhood school.
What is the underlying fear that these schools have by actually testing their students like public school students are tested?
I would say there's a range of reasons. I think, but certainly if it's not at the top, it'll be close to the top, Newell, is the idea that for a number of these schools, especially if you're a private school, you want to have autonomy from what the state requires, whether that's, I mean, a big one is curriculum. And so usually what happens with these tests is the test is aligned to what the state says you have to teach. And so if you're a private school principal, headmaster, you might feel like if I have to give the state test, that means I have to change up my curriculum and a whole bunch of things. And generally speaking, a lot of these schools, and understandably so, are concerned about doing something like that. So by and large, a lot of these states that are passing some of these private school choice laws, there isn't much in terms of having some sort of uniform standard of understanding how kids are doing.
But it would be fairly, maybe I'm naive, but it would seem to me it would be fairly simplistic to develop a test for math and for reading that would be universal.
You would think so. You know, there are some of these state laws where they don't require the private school to administer, say, the state test, but maybe just some sort of general off-the-shelf test to get a basic check on whether kids can read and do math. But again, it's very spotty in terms of how states are doing this. And I'm pretty sure in terms of Texas's bill, the state I just mentioned a moment ago, that there isn't an accountability mechanism. I mean, another element of this is if you talk to folks who are very strong proponents of this, and I consider myself a proponent of private school choice, but if you talk to some of my friends who are really strong proponents, they would argue to you that a parent voting with his or her feet is the ultimate form of accountability. So in other words, if I'm sending my kid to a private school and I don't like that private school, I don't need a test. Like that, I as a parent will take that my kid out of that school and put him somewhere else. And they would argue that that is more effective, more powerful than any sort of test you might be able to offer.
Let's go back to this post-literate society.
Sure.
When you're looking at short-form videos, and that's what kids are consuming at alarming rates today. Is it possible to develop critical thinking skills and to be able to assimilate information across many different silos? And, you know, it seems to me that lends itself to maybe learning facts, but not understanding how these facts fit into the overall picture. You know, you learn about the what, but you don't really learn about the why. Why, you know, outcomes, but not really why that outcome.
Yeah, it's a great question, Newell. I mean, I remember, like, even before, you know, this, you know, the short form videos and social media and some of these things really took hold, even when the internet first came around, there were folks who were arguing, well, kids won't need to learn stuff, they can just Google it. Right. And now this is, you know, in terms of the short form video, it manifests itself in so many different ways. I when I think about the question you just asked, I mean, what I'm seeing and hearing more at the, you know, the university level for students who are going to college, you're hearing more and more stories of professors assigning, let's say, a book for a freshman to read, and freshmen saying, you know, very honestly to their professors, that they don't know how to read a whole book. And then when the professor probes more, said, yeah, when we were in high school, we were never required to read an entire book. We were required to just read, you know, individual passages, maybe a few paragraphs. And I think the trade-off here is if you're not really diving deep and you're not insisting on kids diving deep into a particular author's point of view or whatever it is, that critical thinking you're talking about, I just think it's harder to do. If your whole engagement or your whole experience with literacy is just short form passages, there's not enough meat there, I think, for kids to develop the habits that you're talking about in terms of being able to think critically.
Yeah, I mean, I recognize especially when I went to law school, that a lot of my training in undergrad and through high school and otherwise was rogue memorization. And those kids that went to a different type of school, that really the approach was assimilating all of this information and understanding why this or that or otherwise, that they were much deeper thinkers and better writers, quite frankly, because they were learning in a different way.
Sure.
You know, if you're into the rogue memorization model and you're worrying about your flashcards for spelling, right, all through first, second, and third grade, those that are not worried about that, that are just spelling phonetically and writing and doing journals and stuff like that, I found that those people were better prepared. Even after all of those other years of education, they viewed and thought about the world in a different way. And it was evident to me that without that, you were at a disadvantage, especially like in a law school environment where you had to write and you had to critically think.
I couldn't agree more. I think this is part of the reason why, you know, when you think about what's happening in terms of the Trump administration and the new education secretary, one of her charges that she's been pushing is getting back to the basics, right? Making sure that when it comes to literacy and numeracy, that we are insisting that our kids are learning the fundamentals, the spelling you just mentioned, because if you just jump ahead and don't really pay attention to the fundamentals, like, it might not seem like much at first, but it's kind of like building a house where you don't build a strong foundation and you start building the first, second, and third floor, and then all of a sudden you get to that third floor and things are collapsing in and you go, whoa, what, why did that happen? It's because you didn't establish that strong foundation from the beginning. And I think that's something that people are beginning to pay attention to. Now, in terms of whether that takes hold more broadly, we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, the test of time is what will reveal what's actually working and not working for certain. Dale, as always, always enjoy your writing and really appreciate you joining us today. We thank you for your time and your insight, and have a great week.
You too. Thanks for having me, Neil.
Thank you, sir. Dale Chu, Senior Visiting Fellow, Fordham Institute. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. There's a passage in the article I think that's worth reading, and it says that as technology reshapes how students consume and interact with information, schools appear increasingly outmatched by the rapid pace of change in the digital world. What could this mean for America's students in the long run? 20 years ago, The New Yorker published an article titled Twilight of the Books, offering insight into what a post-literate landscape might look like. And it says, and I quote, "In an oral culture, cliche and stereotype are valued, as accumulations of wisdom and analysis is frowned upon. There's no such concept as plagiarism, and redundancy is an asset that helps an audience follow a complex argument. Opponents in struggle are more memorable than calm and abstract investigation, so bards revel in name-calling and enthusiastic description of physical violence. Since there's no way to erase a mistake invisibly, as one may in writing, speakers tend not to correct themselves at all. Words have their present meanings, but no older ones. And if the past seems to tell a story with values different from current ones, it is either forgotten or silently adjusted. Amid today's coarse politics and unchecked presentism, this description feels eerily familiar, doesn't it? It also underscores the stake in how schools navigate the roles of technology and artificial intelligence in the classroom." You think that that passage was written 20 years ago. How prophetic is that? That is eerie. We'll be right back. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we'll visit with Michael Heck, president and CEO of GNO Inc. And in the 12 o'clock hour, Rob Fry, lead forecaster, National Weather Service, will break down the Colorado State University forecast that was recently released. And we'll check in with Tricia Wallace, president of the Lincoln Beach Community Advisory Committee. They'll have a report that's out this evening with a meeting with relative to the update on Lincoln Beach. So stay with us. Got a lot more coming your way. This is Newell on WWL.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Midi Health.
At any given time, 61% of adult women say they want to lose weight. But for many, that's easier said than done. If you've had trouble losing weight, don't lose hope. Midi Health uses a deep understanding of women's hormones and a combination of weight loss medications to create a customized plan for each user. Midi Health can help you achieve more effective and sustainable weight loss by addressing hormone imbalances. Midi can also prescribe proven weight loss medications that help you experience reduced appetite and increased feelings of fullness. When paired with hormone optimization, you're not just managing your weight, you're also supporting your body's natural processes, which means you can overcome those weight loss plateaus that in the past have been so difficult to move beyond. So if you're ready to combine the power of hormones with the power of weight loss medications, visit joinmidi.com today. Discover how this innovative approach can lead you to lasting success. That's joinmidi.com.
At MLBShop.com, you can get all the latest officially licensed merchandise for you and your family. But if you really want to level up your game, you can grab something for your dog walker, your Pilates instructor, your swim coach, your neighbor, your accountant, your gardener, your best friend, your bandmate, your boss, your kid's teacher, your mailman. Visit MLBShop.com and stock up on officially licensed on-field merchandise from your favorite teams.
Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.